Welcome to episode 19 of Digital Outbox. Hello again, and it's a lovely bright Sunday afternoon. Perfect time to talk about tech. It is, it's lovely up here.
It's just started raining here.
Yeah, but you're in scummy down south. Afternoon, Chris.
Afternoon.
And joining us also is Henry. Hi, Henry.
Hi there.
He's back.
I'm going to try and make more than 20 minutes this week, you know, without, yeah, I did leave. I didn't actually fall asleep. I did leave, you know, and I'm very sorry.
So yeah, you were actually rescuing a family member, so it is okay. It is allowed.
Yeah. I was the only one available. I had to run away. I'm very sorry.
So I figured out.
Yeah, no, Henry, we didn't notice to start with. Ian was the one that said, Henry hasn't said anything for a while.
To be honest, it was all the insightful comment we were missing. I was like, what's going on?
Yeah, I'm really sorry that you missed all that. Because I had loads of insightful comments, as you could have told from the insightful comments that were made in the first 20 minutes or so.
Yeah. Now, our ever-present member, Shaquille, hasn't joined us this week because he's in his sick bed.
Oh, that's a shame.
Bless. So he says yesterday he had a sore throat, and now today it's turned into man flu. So who knows? Who knows how unwell he is? He is a bit of a lightweight when it comes to illnesses. Any little kind of tickly throat knocks him off. So
it's like we're missing a family member, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. So will we crack on?
Let's do it.
I've said so. I said I wouldn't say so today, but that's about the third time I've said so already.
Yeah, we'll count them all up and we'll post the post up how many weeks.
I should be a sponsor of, so count.
So reductions each week.
And well, if you force me to pay a pound each time,
that'll eliminate it straight away.
So, webmail, and I've said so again deliberately. So, webmail security in the headlines, Chris.
Yeah, so this is probably the biggest story of the week, of a week of not too big stories, really. But it sort of started early in the week, and there were people complaining that their Google Mail and their Hotmail accounts have been sending out sort of random emails. I think even Stephen Fry was saying how his account had been sending out weird emails. Then it broke that there was a lot of account information online and available with username passwords, and it had been picked up all by a phishing scam of some sort. Now, I think they said initially there were 30,000 odd accounts with the full details in them.
Well, was it not, I can't remember if it was TTZ or A2C. So if your surname was like ATC, I think they'd posted 30,000 accounts in Pastebin.
Yeah, I think because as the week went on, that number certainly grew. So yeah. it turned out it wasn't just this list that had been leaked. It was a much bigger issue, which Google initially said only about 3,000 accounts are affected, but it got bigger and bigger as the week went on. And in fact, they thought it was a phishing scam, so they thought it was people replying to emails that were requesting their, you know, username, password. But they've been sort of tracking it, and they believe that the growth of it is too great for that kind of that direction. So they're thinking now maybe people have been compromised with keyloggers on their computers. So it's a pretty serious story, which I think all the major sort of webmail account, you know, the Googles and the Hotmails have been locking down on it. They've changed any passwords for account, you know, automatically forced a change of password for accounts that are having a problem, and you have to get in contact with them to sort of retrieve it again. My initial reaction when it first broke was, how are people still being so stupid as to be passing out their username details via email or however these, you know, via websites?
Well, yeah, I know you do say that, but a mate of mine was just saying the other week that he was waiting for his egg statement to come in one week, and just at that particular moment he got a phishing scam email supposedly from Egg, and he did actually click through on it because he was waiting for his statement to come through anyway.
And you know what? So, and exactly the same thing happened to me. So I'd already
stupid?
Kind of put this in as a story, and actually I don't think it was a phishing scam. It was an email from Sky telling me about the Sky Player for Xbox, the Xbox system. And when I clicked through from the email to sort of there was an option to register for your interest to find out when it was happening. It was on a completely random URL. You know, it wasn't on the Sky's own domain name. And I'm pretty sure that this one was actually a genuine, you know, website. But it wasn't until I noticed, you know, I mean, I could have happily entered my information in there and not known anything about it.
Yeah, and to me, it's not that. I mean, I know what you're saying. When if it was a, you know, some Nigerian guy, I mean, I got a spam bit of mail through the week saying I'd won a BT lottery for £1 million. But the English, and it was, you know, straight away you're just like, yeah, English is terrible. So it was an obvious, you know, scam. Yeah. It's the ones that are more socially accurate, like the one of my friends at work was bidding in an eBay auction, and then after it had completed, he got a second chance on the same item. And he was caught up in the moment of, oh, second chance, and gave his details away.
Yeah, and I've heard that's happened to other people as well. So people are probably watching the closing of auctions.
And it's catching these things because you think there's no way this can be random. But obviously it's still a scam and they're still asking you for username and passwords. Yeah. You need to be careful.
And I think there was quite a number of us got caught out. I'm talking a few years ago where there was an online shop selling a bit of hardware that was unbelievably cheap. So you went and entered all your details, including credit card, only for nothing to happen. And then you thought, I mean, there was no saying whether it was genuine or not in the end. And that's what really opened my eyes. And so, yeah, I should probably retract my how are people so stupid and just say people need to be very vigilant. And don't use your major username password type combinations for all the different accounts that you hold.
You know, yeah, I think it's worth saying that I was reading that the advice has changed. It used to be that, you know, they said you should never write down your passwords and stuff. But now they say, actually make a really, really difficult password, write it down and keep it in your wallet. If your wallet gets nicked, then you know it's nicked. You know you need to change your password. So,
yeah,
I think that's quite interesting, the way things have kind of changed.
Yeah, so a strong password, because, you know, the people are less likely to get that physical piece of paper. But also don't write down what that account password's for on that bit of paper. That's fair to say as well, isn't it?
That's
don't write Hotmail and then your password
alongside the word rob me. Cloud issues in the last day have also been quite an issue in America. So T-Mobile have put a statement that all their Sidekick customers have lost their online data. So Sidekick was run by Danger. Danger have been bought by Microsoft. And a statement has come out that regrettably, based on Microsoft Danger's latest recovery assessment of their systems, must now inform you that personal information stored on your device, such as contacts, calendar, to-do lists, or photos, that is no longer on your Sidekick, almost certainly has been lost. So this is down to a server failure. And understandably, a lot of the customers are amazed at this. But it emphasises a couple of things, that you can't rely on the cloud. You know, if that's the only place where that information is held, you really have to have a backup somewhere else, a bit like your local data. So if you've got something on your PC that you think, oh, if I lose this, if my PC breaks and you back it up, I think you should still apply that to anything in the cloud as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously when you sign up to cloud services, you're putting a lot of faith in systems that you have no control over. And when it's big organisations like Microsoft, you tend to think, well, they're probably safer where, you know, in the cloud than it is on my local machine.
I'm still of the view that if you've got a service like this, I mean, where was the backup? If a server drops, I expected it to be backed up.
You would have expected to be redundantly available in several different locations.
Yeah, so
it's obviously done on the cheap, isn't it, really?
Well, it just sounds incredible.
It's just a little
absolutely
Mac store,
incredible.
External drive attached somewhere.
Yeah, you know, it's if I think of what I do for backups, and then I think of what we're doing at our work for backups, and then I look at something like this, it's incredible, absolutely incredible.
It's because they don't have Time Machine, of course, isn't it, being Microsoft?
That's what it is, yeah, they haven't got the rollback. Backups, obviously, something you have to take personal responsibility for as much as anything, isn't it? I think people need to be aware of that as well.
No, definitely. I mean, I guess when I back up quite religiously, I guess you guys are doing it as well.
Yeah.
I'm not backing up, actually. I must confess. I'm going to lose something some point, but, you know.
Yeah. I have a sort of strategy which I use, but I mean, I'm not religious about it, but, you know, I've had enough close calls now that I am pretty careful about what I do.
One service that would do away with backups is, surprisingly, Napster.
Napster, yeah, and evolved again. really. News this week that we've Napster's relaunched with a kind of a cheaper unlimited download service, only £5 a month. And for that, you get 5 permanent downloads every month. They've got about 8 million songs to choose from. So do you think this is maybe a reaction to what to the popularity of Spotify and things? I think it really could be. Sounds quite a compelling compelling service.
It sounds excellent, actually. The price, I mean, for that price to get the same streaming service as you get from Spotify, but you can actually, I mean, you're getting a chance to buy or own music as well.
Yeah, in fact, you know, just this week on Digital Outbox, Chris, you were saying that, weren't you, about Spotify? That would be a great thing that they could do, offer some downloads.
I mean, I said as an addition to Spotify, that's probably the way to go. I mean, I knew that Napster have done that before, where they've, you know, included in the prices a certain amount of free downloads, but the price being dropped to £5 is, I imagine, a direct response to Spotify. And I mean, Napster's the company that never seems to go away. I mean, so they were the first one to be highlighted as to the place to download illegal music, wasn't it? They got sued the hell out of, but they've never disappeared fully. And this seems to be that they're putting themselves back in the race.
Yeah, I just wonder how many folks will really sign up, though. I mean, there was the news about Spotify that was they got about you know, in six figures. Users are actually paying for their service, so they're starting to
make some money out of that.
Well, it's between 1 million and 12 million a month, so how much of that they have to give away to the
probably between about 1 million and 12 million in license fees. Yeah,
a vast amount of money. So and they're complaining, of course, about the pay per listen royalties that they've got to pay as well. So
well, it was those royalties that really took Pandora away from the UK market.
That's right. I mean, Pandora could never get that agreement, could they?
Yeah, well, I know the new agreement. I think the new agreement came in about 6-8 weeks ago, and Pandora put a statement saying seems a lot more opportunity there for them to come back in.
Okay.
Certainly, because it's the same for all your internet radio stations as well. A lot of the little ones just completely knocked off the net by the huge royalty fees. But they're definitely much more reasonable now than they were even. And of course, that's why Google's come back into the music videos back on YouTube as well.
Yeah.
Because the royalties are a bit more reasonable. But.
So the landscape is changing.
Definitely. I don't know why, but Spotify still attracts me more. And I don't know if it's the playlists or, you know, it's just a bit of better tech, you know, when I compare the other ones. And I was just looking at the BBC News article there, and they're talking about another service called We7, which I've got to be honest, I've never heard of.
I'd never, and I picked up on that as well. But I never actually went to have a look at it.
Yeah, Rival We7 is a free streaming service supported by ads. It offers pay for downloads, and it claims to have more visitors than any other British music website. Maybe it does. I've never heard of it.
I've never heard of it. Not at all.
But as Spotify, I don't know if it's just because of the, you know, and amongst the tech community, it really seems to have got some traction.
It does. I mean, I really like the interactive playlist facility in Spotify. I just think that's great. The way that you can post a link to something, you can say, look, you know, we're going to have a party or something, have some folk around, you know, what music would you like? Just, you know, put in your
request. It's very smart.
Very good, very good. They've really kind of got that whole link into, I suppose, how these online services and that really should be working. That the uniqueness of the internet, really, for some of this stuff. I think it's good.
Yeah, definitely. Moving on to Windows Mobile 6.5. We've spoken about this a few times over the last, I guess, 6-8 weeks. It's finally out, Chris.
Yep, so there's handsets now out in the out there with 6.5 on it. So we've seen this week the first reviews coming out. I haven't used it to know my own personal opinion, but the reviews tend to be sort of along the lines of, yeah, okay, but it's still a bit rubbish. They've given it a new front end. So the first few screens you see are very much more touch orientated. You know, there's some nice transitions, and there's some easy, you know, it's much easier to use on the move and on the go. So it's much more finger orientated, but there's still so much that still requires a stylus, which just seems, you know, like they've patched 6.1, and 6.1 itself was a patch from 6. So they're kind of scrabbling around. I mean, they did warn ahead of time that 6.5 really was only a quick fix, and that 7's the one that they're kind of looking towards. But, you know, there seemed like there was more they could have done, or that they had to do, really, to try and get themselves back in the race. Their mobile, they've got Windows Mobile 6, I think, on it now. Windows Mobile Browser 6. And apparently that's still not up there. It doesn't display very well. Nothing on the Safari browser on the iPhone.
And the worst thing about it for me is it's not just, I mean, they're not just competing with Apple. You've got Palm, you know, that have almost come from nowhere. And you look at, you know, if you look at the product they've got, it's a real shame, to be honest.
I think there's also something here, you know, that they're trying to, if they've announced, because they have announced today, Mobile 7 coming out, you know, surely most people are thinking, well, why want to buy something just now when Mobile 7 is just around the corner? I'd be thinking, I don't know.
Well, I don't think it's quite as around the corner as we think it is. It's going to be probably towards the middle of next year, so that's still a fair long time.
It's a fair long time, but if I'm going to make an investment now, do I wait 6-7 months? Do I look at a Palm that's coming out next week? Do I look at Android, which is getting a lot of press?
I think it's fair to say this is still a step up. And in fact, people like HTC are releasing handsets that have got their own sort of shell on top of the mobile environment. And actually, some of those handsets are getting really good reviews. So there's still something to be said for having 6.5 out there. You know, it is a step up. And it is only a point upgrade. You know, they haven't said it's a new, complete, you know, new version. I listened to Steve Ballmer on CNET website. It was part of their conversation set, and he sounded like he didn't really care. He wasn't listening to the tech community at all, really, about where the tech community thinks that Windows needs to go to try and react to this competition from the iPhone. And, you know, his argument was always, well, we've got 95% of the market. Apple have only got like 5%. What I don't think he sort of takes into account is that 5% is pretty influential. And, you know, whenever anyone asks me what kind of computer I should get now, I'm thinking it's hard not to point them towards Apple.
See that little drip, drip, drip feed?
Yeah, it's working.
But it's I don't know. I mean, I've watched some of the Ballmer interviews recently as well, and there's he's focusing the business side of things. He's focusing on, we've got market share. Over time, that will erode.
And it could happen pretty quickly, you know?
Yeah.
Very quickly. Well, you see how quickly Palm has fallen from being the device that everybody had to have to being, well, kind of nothing. At least they're doing something with the pre, but, you know.
Yeah. I mean, me and Henry had Palms way back in the day, and it was the device to have. It was superb.
It was excellent.
And they just did nothing with it. It just rested on those laurels.
Yep.
And part of me feels that's the same with Windows Mobile. You know, we've got this massive market share. Why do we need to do anything else? And it's allowed other people to come along and put out some better products.
Yeah, well, sadly, we have to wait till next year to see exactly where they're really going with the Windows Mobile 7. In the meantime, then, mobile coverage across the UK, Ofcom have come out and said that consumers need to have a much greater period of time where they can try before they buy, or at least have a increased period where they can retract their contracts if the coverage that they're getting is not as good as they're expecting to get. So for example, you know, I've got my iPhone and it's a 3G capable iPhone, but I hardly ever get to use 3G because where I am and where I work, there's no coverage. So I'm paying for a service that I generally don't get to use.
Yeah, which is a real shame.
It is a real shame.
Either. You know, I really do take it for advantage. You know, I take it as a given that I'm going to get 3G.
It sounded really sarcastic.
That's just me. I can't be helped.
But I still don't know how they're actually going to measure this, because, you know, you're actually going to have an interview with somebody about what features you're looking for, and, you know, whether 3G is important to you and whether you can get that near about where you're going to live and work and stuff. I mean, it seems a bit funny to me.
Well, yeah, I think they're just saying that, you know, if if you're not getting the service that you're actually paying for, you should at least have the option to retract your contract, you know, take it back, get your money back.
If you've used it for a couple of weeks and you've done everything you can to see how if you can get a better reception, and there's nothing you can do, you can just say, there it is, I'm out of my contract.
Yeah, because 18 months is a long way to sign up for something, you know, where you don't have that option to back out if it's not what you thought it was. So
definitely.
Hopefully that'll... what comes from it.
I was just looking at the article there. O2 says it's got a try before you buy contract.
Yes.
14 days.
Yeah. I mean, 14 days seems reasonable to me anyway. So I don't know what else...
Do they advertise it, though? I think that's the thing. Do they make sure you're aware of all that?
I don't know on the mobile side, but they've also emphasised for the home broadband. And certainly when I signed up, I think it was a 60-day money-back guarantee. And they've now dropped that to 30-day. Seemingly they change how long that guarantee is in place for. Orange have just talked about how their 3G service covers 93%.
And I think these new the fact that Orange and Vodafone are getting into the iPhone market, which is the sort of dominant area at the moment, I think we'll see these networks getting better. But you know, it's going to take a while. I mean, it's not an easy quick thing to put in place, is it?
No.
No. Not at all.
No. So I've said so again, just in case you're...
Yeah, I've said it
count.
Twice since we last did it. So.
Big change in America from AT&T is they put an announcement out through the week that they're going to allow VoIP over the 3G network. So one of the big blockers at the moment is if you've got Skype or one of the other VoIP applications on the iPhone, you couldn't use it on the 3G network, you're using Wi-Fi. I think the annoying thing for most folk was that if you had a different phone on AT&T, they did allow VoIP over 3G. So it was purely protecting the bandwidth. Just I'm guessing due to the iPhone sales and how many people are using iPhones for data. O2 do the same in the UK, so they don't allow Skype on 3G either. But from now on, and I mean, Apple and Skype have come out with statements since saying this is great news, and they're going to try and get a product or get Skype updated and the other VoIP software updated quickly in the App Store to make it available.
So we've got to hope that O2, Orange and Vodafone all follow suit and allow that new app to work across the 3G network. I'm sure they will. I think where AT&T go, O2 sort of have to follow, really.
I'd like to think so. And
In fact, O2 have probably delivered a better service than AT&T have.
Yeah, well,
undoubtedly they've got a better service.
But I don't have the call drop issues that a lot of Americans talk about. We've had MMS for a lot longer than AT&T have.
Yeah, we had it straight away, didn't we, when it was announced?
And I'm hoping the fact that Orange soon and Vodafone early next year coming along means that this kind of thing puts a bit of pressure on as well.
Yeah, I think the only thing O2 have failed on is their general coverage, which again in key areas it's fine, you know, around big cities. But it doesn't extend as well. You know, their coverage is the lowest of the 3G networks, the last time I looked, at least.
Oh, no, I think they're lowest by quite a margin.
Yeah.
Our last story on mobile platforms is Flash.
Yeah, well, it's, Adobe Flash, the kind of thing you're really looking for in lots of websites and stuff. And, you know, Adobe have come out and said that they obviously support... They've got Flash on all sorts of mobile platforms except one, which is, of course, the iPhone, which has been a big bone of contention for lots of folk. But actually, Adobe have got it working on iPhones. So they've got some stuff out there where you can... they've got working Flash content.
It's another thing that I think Apple are holding up because they don't like letting general release stuff. I mean, again, they're saying it's because they don't want it to affect the experience on the phone, and they're not sure the phone can actually cope with the weight of Flash applications running. And in fact, that's generally a concern across all the new applications they're releasing across the different handsets. We've yet to find out whether a smartphone can actually cope with running Flash. I know computers that have struggled with some of the applications out there on the net. So they're going to have to be careful to make sure that this isn't just something that's released and actually ends up being pretty useless. And I think that's probably what Ashley are concerned about.
It would be much better to actually have it there, and then you, as a user, can, you know, try it and find out, well, that's a, that just doesn't work on the thing, rather than actually being completely blocked.
Is it? It's not the Apple way.
It is definitely not the Apple way.
No, I mean, one of the apps I have installed on my Mac is something called Click to Flash, which just disables all Flash content. Because there's so many times I've got to visit a website and there's some crappy Flash advert that just starts hogging processor.
Well, that's true. I've got something called Flush, which gets rid of all the Flash.
What a great
Flash
name.
Stuff. Well, it's really good because, you know, you don't realise how many kind of your username kind of passwordy type things.
Yeah.
Sometimes, actually, they're not contained in cookies anymore. They're often contained within Flash content, so you know, you can just for security to try and get rid of all those things, it's good to have something that just, you know, gets rid of that in a one-off. So be interesting to see how this all pans out though.
No, definitely. It's my take on it is that the iPhone is the last handset not to have Flash. I still don't know if it's that big an issue, apart from, you know, it would be good to see at least, you know, some content from time to time. I can't think of anything but I miss. You know, I can't think of a website that I go to that is so Flash dependent that I can't use it on the iPhone.
Just generally, though, having the availability on some sites of seeing video content, I know they've obviously, you know, solved it for YouTube and for the iPlayer and things like that.
Yeah.
But it would be good if you're watching a review site or reading a blog post and they've got a video embedded, it'd be nice to be able to watch it.
And to be fair, that is true. I mean, I'm sure some of our own website content won't be viewable.
That's right.
That really is the thing. It's video that's the thing. It's not actually, I mean, you know, we're all sick of Flash websites per se, but Flash video, FLV, is pretty much a standard. And the fact that you can't view it on the iPhone is much more of an issue.
Yeah, I just hate to have something. I'd hate to have Flash, but and it makes, you know, the Safari browser, you know, either slower or a bit more crash-tastic on the iPhone. I'm quite pleased with how that works right now.
Yeah, so and I guess that's exactly why they're stalling on it.
Yeah, and also it protects a kind of market for them as well.
For sure.
Well, they'd much rather we use something else, wouldn't they? So that's that.
BT this week announced that they're actually going to push fibre to 1.5 million more homes than previously announced. So I think it was either early this year or late last year, they announced that they were actually going to push fibre to mostly new builds and businesses, around 1 million homes and businesses across the UK. But they've now said that's actually going to be 2.5 million. They've not put any detail around where these extra lines will be installed.
To be honest, that could just be one city, couldn't it?
It could be, you know, so they could roll that out to, I guess, a Glasgow or a Manchester or a Birmingham.
You know, they did say where the original covered. Where the original things were, originally where they were going to...
Originally, well, all they said was they were targeting new builds. And I guess that makes sense because they have better access to lay fibre, etc. But they're now saying that this is going to be existing buildings or homes and businesses they're now going to target. And they hope to have that done by 2012. They also, which I thought was quite interesting, they've also updated more information on the fibre to the cabinet rollout,
it's a much more reasonable thing, that, isn't it? Fibre to the
cabinet. Much more reasonable, yep.
And I can actually see all the work around my neighbourhood's taking place right now. So we've got a whole lot of Openreach vans and trucks digging up the road. So it's all getting done now.
It's so much the haves and the have-nots, because we haven't even got unbundled here.
I'm
talking about fibre and stuff.
I know.
I don't think you're missing, though, with the unbundled. That really has been a waste of time.
The biggest thing I miss out on is the fact that it's a lot more expensive when you're not unbundled, and you don't have the choice that you do when...
So, I mean, like O2, Sky, etc., you know, you can pay £5-10 a month if you're unbundled, or you're paying £18
exactly
for probably a lesser service.
That's
true. And the contracts are longer as well sometimes.
Yep. You know, so I think it's purely down to choice for me. I can get far cheaper broadband, you know, with an unbundled provider. But the fibre to the cabinet, what they're talking about for my local area is that from the 4th of January next year, they should have services available. And they've actually released pricing details. So their BT are going to charge out to broadband providers an annual rental of £88.08 for up to 40 meg down and up to 10 meg up. So
that's brilliant.
And is that to be spread across a number of different connections? How does that work? Do we know any details like that?
No.
Each individual?
I just took it that if they take that rental and if they offered me, I don't know, I guess I would pay, I'm paying a tenner just now. If they offered me something like £20 a month to get an up to 10 meg, if I could get something like a 5 meg up out of that, I'd be chuffed to bits. I'm not too fussed about the download speed, actually. It's more the up. Since starting the podcast and also with the gaming, I just think up's far more important for me than downloading right now.
Yeah, I think for me, they've got the download sorted even on sort of relatively fast, just ADSL. But yeah, upload as a developer can take ages.
Yeah.
Can it? It's just, you really need that. And that's where, I suppose, you know, the old the SDSL is always really good if you can, but, you know, it's definitely always
yet
a lot cheaper
expensive
than the cheap line. It is very expensive, you're right.
Yeah. So one other little point, competitors will be able to buy access to the fibre as well. Although BT will have greater control over pricing than it currently does with ADSL. And it just leaves a question around about Virgin Media. Obviously, they've got their fibre network, which they don't allow access to. And it would be far better from a competition point of view and from getting it across the country. You know, if Virgin said, there's our network, anybody can use it in the same way, then BT could then say, well, we'll target all these other areas then.
Yeah, and in the
rather
same
than
way,
duplicating, sort of, because I know I'm getting the fibre options in the same place I can get Virgin Media.
So it's kind of splitting the service down into the delivery network and then the actual provider network.
Yeah.
So same as they did with sort of gas lines, I guess, and things.
Yeah, because there's other networks as well. There's the guys that are putting fibre through the sewers.
Yes.
Which sounds like a great... It sounds a bit smelly, but it sounds like that.
I was just about to say shit, broadband.
But, you know, the fact that you've got access under the road and things to get your fibre around the place makes it a lot cheaper to lay the fibre and get it round to the cabinets, and certainly, you know, more competition, definitely better.
The only thing, yeah, I said, and it's a bit, we've talked about it with 3G. I mean, if you look at all the different 3G networks, they're all strong in city centres, etc. You know, a much more sensible approach would have been one 3G network across the whole of the UK.
Yep.
But common sense isn't so common.
That's only sensible from a consumer point of view, not necessarily a business point of view.
And also, I'm an Apple fanboy, so surely I can't be sensible about competition. Surely. We mentioned O2 during our talk there. One thing that has changed this week is that their off-net product is now traffic managed. So O2 offer two different broadband services. They offer their own unbundled service, if you're not in an unbundled area, you can still get broadband from O2, but that's through the BT network. And it's that BT network that are actually going to start traffic management. So on torrents, so any peer-to-peer, and in news groups as well, they will manage traffic from now on.
So not only do I have to pay a lot more, I'm getting a worse service from two fronts now.
Sucks to be you.
It does.
It's a shame, isn't it? Oh, dear.
You can move.
I could do that, yeah.
But I mean, the thing, well, it's...
It seems a bit drastic.
It does.
Why did
seem
you move
from
the location? No, due to data networks.
Well, when I was moving the house, I was making sure that broadband was still a great option.
Yeah, and to be honest, it does. It's funny how it would form part of your buying decision, wouldn't it?
For me, it's up there with getting power. You know, it's like gas, electricity, and broadband, and water.
Water afterwards.
Yeah.
Water afterwards. Yeah, well, back to the sewers again.
There's always a shop with iron brew, so I don't need water. I'm not a tea or coffee drinker. As long as I can get some diet brew, I'm sorted. But I think this is just par for the course, really. We're just going to see more and more providers moving to, you know, managing traffic.
All these technologies become more and more mainstream, and just your regular everyday consumer starts consuming a lot more, you know. Even my parents watching a load of iPlayer and stuff, it all puts a massive strain on.
I don't know how we can still continue to have these kind of unlimited broadband stuff, it doesn't really seem to make sense to me in terms of how much we can use all the time. You know, there has to be a limit. And as long as those limits are clear, then I don't see a problem. I see a problem with these kind of things where people in the middle of 18-month, 24-month contracts or whatever are suddenly told that, and maybe had signed up on the basis of it being unlimited, and then this kind of comes in the middle. I think that's a bit unfair, and I think people should be able to get out of their contracts if that's the case.
But at the same time, in general, 99% of people that are using newsgroups or are torrenting are not doing it legally.
Yeah. Okay.
Thing is,
no, it's just that everybody does it. You know what I mean? I don't know anybody doesn't do it, but it's at the bottom line is they're stopping you doing something illegal.
Where does the money that I pay for my transfer go to? And you know who it feels like it's paid from both ends. So someone like a provider like BBC with their iPlayer content. They pay for their transfer at their end, and I pay for it at my end. So there's a lot of money going somewhere, paying for all this transfer, which I guess is for the network upkeep, is for, you know, making sure hardware's running and, you know, those sort of things. But is it going into just maintenance, or is it going into actually trying to improve things and making the availability better?
You know, I'm thinking it must be the latter. Or else, why would we be getting these network upgrades? Why would you get unbundled gear and the right exchanges, etc.?
But it does seem that all the providers are now bitching about how much people are using.
Yeah.
When you're thinking, well, there's that many people using it, and they're paying for a service that hopefully that money's going to actually helping the situation rather than just lining someone's pockets.
Well, the bandwidth is expensive. That's the thing, isn't it? So
I don't understand why it's expensive. Once the network's there, it's maintenance, isn't it?
Yeah. And shareholder profit.
Yeah, shareholder profit. And I guess it's supposed to be so that they can improve the network and start putting in these fibre lines, but that's what the 50p tax is for as well. So they're attacking now from three angles. So as a sender, you get charged. As a receiver, you get charged. And now as just a general consumer, you're getting charged as well.
Yeah, it's actually an excellent point. I've not given it a lot of thought. It's something to dig into and find out more about, just how it all splits up and who gets what from your money. On that note, and I'm sure the Apple section this week and the Gadget and Games is going to be a bit shorter because Shaki was not here. I feel that I need to up my fanboyism.
Yeah, you're going to have to increase the levels. Move
exactly.
That pile.
Set fanboy to, I don't know.
Whoop levels.
Yeah.
Whoop level 5.
So something that caught my eye this week was VMware Fusion 3. If you're not a Mac user, you've maybe not heard of Fusion.
I have no idea what it is.
Well, I don't know if you've heard. You heard of VMware?
Yep.
So
yep,
for supporting virtual machines.
Yep.
So Fusion is just the kind of the name of the software on the Mac.
Okay.
So there's a new version coming out at the end of October, and it's designed for Snow Leopard. It supports 64-bit kernel, and it also allows for virtualization of 64-bit operating systems. So it'll support actual virtualization of Snow Leopard and Windows 7. And I guess the big thing for Mac users who also want to use Windows and get a true Windows environment, up to now the two virtualization, well there's actually three big ones, but there's
Parallels.
There's been Parallels, there's Fusion, and there's also Sun's one, which is free. Was that VirtualBox, it was called? I can't remember if that was its name, but it was a free one from Sun. And those three were the kind of the main ones from my point of view, but the Fusion will be the first one to actually add support for Aero. So you get that the proper kind of glass C3A front end, and they've also made sure that it works with Windows 7 seemingly very well. It's actually quite a big release.
Yeah, that definitely.
And certainly performance for me has been excellent. So I'm actually looking forward to this. Because if you could get
Does it feel like it is from your experience of it on a Mac, does it feel like it's a proper PC machine, as in it feels slick enough?
Performance for me has been, certainly, you know, you're in a virtual environment. They've done their best. Well, I think they've done their best to kind of blend both. There's a mode within, and I'm going to get them the wrong way around, was it Unity within Fusion? And it kind of blends. You almost don't know you're going into a different operating system. So you can, like, you know, I can have an icon for Word on my desktop, on my Mac, and click it. And if Fusion's running in the background, it'll launch Word. And you don't, it doesn't launch into almost like a different operating system. It's launching it within, you feel it's within the same operating system.
Yeah, parallels coherence, I think, is the same kind of
feature. Yeah, and that's, I couldn't remember which way around because both have got the same options.
Yeah.
It's actually, when you see it running, it actually works really well.
But are there still things, Ian, that you actually use that for?
Very, very little. And it's mostly when I'm doing some bits and pieces for work, to be honest. There was a way around, I think it was Parallels, there was a way around of getting Windows 7 to install, but I ended up just dual booting Windows 7 on my laptop. And that was the best way of trying Windows 7 over the last couple of months.
You see, I think dual booting is definitely the way, you know, if you want to play games or anything, really, there's not, I mean, I can imagine if I was doing a lot of web development and I wanted to see, you know, I wouldn't want to see what things looked like in IE6, but you'd think you probably had to test it out. Probably quite good to have it for something like that. But, it's a good feature for people maybe switching to Macs who think, well, you know, I've still got some old Windows software I quite like to.
And I think that was a big thing. It was for switchers. It was a way of easily getting access to Windows, especially if you've bought software, you know, or if you use things like Visio or Access, where there's just there's no Mac equivalent for it.
No,
isn't it a shame that you can't do it the other way around?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice if you could get people to switch by installing OS X on a kind of PC hardware?
Yeah, but you'd buy your cheap and nasty PCs and not get to enjoy the fantastic design from Apple.
Okay, I mean,
I'm on fanboy to maximum now.
Yeah, and exactly, and but okay, sod off Apple. Don't install Windows on your hardware then. Lock it all down.
No,
you don't get to use it, and you don't get to use those bits of software that you can't use on your Apple.
I know, it's frustrating.
Yeah,
This is virtualization software, which PCs have really gone for in a big way, because they're really, it's, you know, that any business now, any reasonable sized business is going for virtualization in a huge way as a way of reducing the costs of managing all their users. Macs just aren't in that space really. They don't have the.
But for a home user, for a home user switching, it's a great option. And I think, as Chris said, if you were a Windows user right now, It would be nice if you could just pick up a virtualization tool and install an OS X and use it.
Well, of course you can do that. It's just not legal.
No.
Yes.
But if you could get to a point where you're just buying hardware and you could use the best software out there as a consumer at home, that would be great. As a manufacturer of PC or of home products, I'm sure Apple would be sitting there going, no, you can't do that, because that's where they're making a lot of their money.
And I think, a lot of my opinion does come from that consumer point of view rather than a business point of view.
Yeah.
And from a business point of view, yeah, Windows virtualization is a massive thing, and Apple probably doesn't come into it so much.
Yeah, I really miss Shaki. I need his fanboyism to get me through this. So much so that I'm going to move on to iPhones. It's a 3.1.2. which I can't believe I managed to say without stumbling on update.
A 0.1 update.
3.1.2. I threw it on. I wasn't having any issues anyway. Seemingly this fixes sporadic issues where iPhone wouldn't wake up from sleep, occasional crashes when streaming video, and intermittent cellular service interruptions, which could be a host of things. You guys installed it?
Nope.
Nope. I didn't even realize it was out until I saw the is on today's schedule. I guess that means I haven't whacked in my iPhone to update yet.
Well, it only checks. I don't know if it's every 7 days, so I think it just depends when you installed the last one and what triggers that cycle. See, one of the things that I thought was worth mentioning was RunKeeper. It was one of my picks a couple of weeks ago. I was out for a hill walk yesterday. 3¾-hour walk, half hour for lunch, and only use up 60% of the battery. My first walk back in January or February this year, I managed to get about a 2.5-hour, 3-hour recording in RunKeeper, and that was the battery flat. So combinations of, I think, Apple making better option or better upgrades, sorry, better battery life on each upgrade, and I think RunKeeper as well has improved.
I wonder if they're getting feedback from that the survey they've set up about battery life.
Yeah,
they've started to look at things like that.
I don't know. I was so impressed yesterday because
that's not even using any of your extra juice from your extra pack.
So now. it was 100% when we got out of the car, and when we got back in 5 hours later, it was at 40%.
That does sound like a huge improvement.
It's been using GPS all the time. Tracked the walk perfectly. So I was really chuffed with that because it means, you know, from my point of view, I'm now thinking we can do all day walks, you know, alongside the battery, and I'm going to be covered. Way.
Very good.
Our final Mac story this week is more tablet rumours. And we're doing this story just because, really, we miss you, Shaq. You need to be here for our rumour stories.
Yeah, and I don't know whether you'll notice the difference in tone, maybe, of this story from when Shaq does it.
But, I don't think so.
But apparently, it's going to be manufactured by Foxconn.
Wow. So
really?
Yeah, it's amazing. And I know that's going to affect everyone.
That's actually made me think more about getting one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know, because we don't even know whether this thing exists, but apparently it's going to be manufactured for the beginning of next year. Potentially sort of 300,000 to 400,000 units, something like that. Obviously, you know.
Is that 100,000?
Well, I'd like one.
300,000 to 400,000, yeah.
Yeah, not 300,000.
So did I say something wrong?
Imagine me. 300,000
to 400,000.
Not only do we know who's going to manufacture it, but last week I think Shaq reported that it was going to be a 10.7-inch panel on the front.
Yeah, I think that was widely accepted as the.
I mean,
the
I thought
size.
That was a great size. Did you think that was good?
Yeah,
I thought it was a great size.
Well,
perfect. Just what I was looking for.
I think it's only going to be 10.6, I'm afraid.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
We're going to lose a 0.1 of an inch.
That's
now turning me off it again.
Yeah, you know, I mean, size is everything.
Especially when it's geared towards ebook functionality, which apparently it is.
Mm. Well, all I can say is hopefully Shaq will be back next week.
Mm. And he can report on the 0.1
because
of an inch.
I think, I mean, his rumours are always accurate.
Yeah. I don't think there's one that we can say hasn't turned out to be true.
One thing, we could make one up, couldn't we?
What about the tablet?
Yeah.
See whether it gets out there.
Yeah.
It's only going to be black and white.
Really?
Yeah. They're going to come up with a new e-ink type thing. Yeah, there's no colour.
Well, but that will really help with the battery life, though, which is a key thing for this. So I'm quite pleased they're taking that battery life thing so seriously, because that's really good.
Yeah. It will be shiny black ink. It will be the best black ink, the best looking.
But surely if it's black and white, is that not just going to make it a Kindle?
Oh, yeah, which is coming to the
UK.
It is.
It's made by Apple. Oh, sorry, I'm missing your link here.
Yeah. So hard.
Sorry. That was a great link. That was an amazing link, Chris. And I blew it.
Yeah. Get it right, newbie.
Newbie.
So slick. Yep, so we've heard this week that the Kindle is coming to the UK. You could previously buy it through Amazon.com from the US, but you obviously had to pay your import taxes, and also it wouldn't work on any kind of cellular network, which is quite a big selling point for the Kindle. So they have now released going to release into 99 extra countries all around Europe, including the UK, and people will be able to access via 3G. Don't know what carrier they're going to use at the moment, but all your transfer of your books and content will happen at no additional charge.
Mm.
So they're actually releasing a new version in the US as well. So the selling point for that will be that you can come to Europe and you can still, you know, update your content, get the latest books and newspapers. And we're talking about £175.
But no web browsing?
No, that's been chopped off now. So there's no web browsing and you can't subscribe to sort of read blog posts. So that's sort of the downside of this version, especially for the US market. But it's good that it's coming.
I don't know about you. I won't be buying one.
No, it just doesn't seem
interest me in the slightest.
It doesn't interest me, but it does. There is a big market out there that does seem to interest a lot.
Yeah, sure.
You know, that ability to be able to buy the latest books and have it straight away, have your newspapers with you in the morning.
I quite like the idea of the newspapers, got to be honest. Because I do have a quick skim through Google Reader. First thing, just to kind of catch up on some news stuff and some tech news. So
I don't know what kind of price they charge for that, though. Do they?
I don't
any
know.
Ideas?
I don't know. And that's the only thing.
But then why would you? You've got all that stuff on your iPhone or whatever anyway, so why would you go for a Kindle? And then you've got Stanza on the iPhone as well, which gives you a whole load of books and stuff.
Henry, how many gadgets have I bought over the years?
Yeah, no, but I can't. How many did I actually need? I just don't see the point of a Kindle. And there was also news last week from the universities that have been trying this, and they're just saying, this is rubbish. It doesn't meet any kind of need that we actually have. It's just like it's to me it's like the original microprocessor. It's a solution for something looking for a problem.
But it's sold very well in the US. So there's obviously clearly a market of people who love reading. You know, being able to take all your books away on holiday for some people is just like being able to take all your music away on holiday.
Clearly
that is true. And I think there is a market there, but I don't think it's as big a market as, say, video or music. I can't see this turning into everybody's got a Kindle in the same way that everybody's got an iPhone or an iPod.
Well, as it seems like the Apple tablet is going to be geared towards that kind of ebook functionality, you're kind of saying there's no market.
Well, we've said before, but I'm struggling to see who will go and buy the tablet. What is the compelling sell for it, apart from it's Apple and I'm a fanboy?
I think the Kindle sell well. It's a good present to get for certain people, and it's not, you know, £175 isn't outside of that, you know, Christmas type gift.
But is it 175? Is that £175 including all the shipping and all the taxes you need to pay?
I thought this new version was being sold on the UK website, and therefore
no.
Not
well, if you go to the UK website, it actually says you need to buy this on Amazon.com,
changing.
Yeah, they have said it will change, but not initially.
Right.
Prefer an iPod Touch.
And I don't think it includes shipping, and I don't think it includes taxes. Something in my head says it was about 220 by the time you added on the other bits and pieces, which still isn't bad, I don't think.
It's certainly going to be a lot less than a tablet.
Yeah, oh yeah. And that's that, I don't know.
Tablet but quite price. A bit more than an iPod Touch.
Not really.
What, 150 quid? A basic iPod Touch, 150 quid?
Yeah.
Which would probably have more storage than the Kindle, which I think has only got 2 gig on it.
Yeah, and it also is the funnest device out there.
And it'll browse the web for you. It'll be able to get all your stuff, all your newspaper stuff, and plus all the you know, any games and all.
Only over Wi-Fi though. I mean, if the latest book gets released while you're away from your Wi-Fi, I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah, but you've already got 80 books. Do you really need the 81st?
How many music tracks have you got?
Not enough. Hence Spotify. In fact, I'll throw all the Spotify ones at you. I've got 6 million. Bring it.
You'd have 8 million if you went with Napster.
Yeah, but I'd feel dirty. we'll mention it anyway. I was going to drop this story, but I don't know if you saw the Microsoft video that came out at the start of the week with all the different multi-touch mice that they've been prototyping and testing in their labs over the last couple of years. And some of them are just crazy.
Incredible.
Just, you know, I want a mouse I can use. You know, it's all, I'm all for innovation, but most of these just look like you wouldn't use them.
No, of course not.
Oh. There was one which I thought might work, and that was the one with the kind of pincer for your forefinger and your thumb. That looked like it might work, but so many of the other ones just looked incredibly awkward and give me a button.
Moving on, Rock Band for the iPhone's been confirmed. EA's finally put paid to all the rumours from the last year by saying it'll be available within the next month. 15 songs, 5 unlockable, with Facebook integration. And it'll also support downloadable tracks and 4-player multiplayer via Bluetooth. You guys excited about this?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if it works as a 4-player thing and you happen to have 4 people near you with an iPhone, maybe it would be quite fun. Doesn't it need a peripheral? I mean, the DS version had I think it was Guitar Hero, didn't it? Had that peripheral.
Yeah.
If this is going to be pressing virtual buttons and strumming virtual strings on the iPhone, it's just not going to work.
It's not going to work. I can't see it working. I mean, the DS version is a bit daft as it is, and to see it on.
Have you guys played Tap Tap Revenge?
Nope.
Yes. Okay, and that does work very well. Okay. I take back what I previously just said. Okay, so I was talking rubbish.
So there was Tap Tap Revenge 1 and 2, which were both free, and you could, you know, download tracks, etc. And I actually thought it worked really well. There's a Tap Tap Revenge 3 just come out this week, which is their first paid for one. So I don't know if it'll be as popular. But they've also got it also supports in-app payments as well. So you can actually pay for tracks within the game. And I must admit, I did like Tap Tap Revenge 2, but it's not one of these games that I want to play all the time. You know, and I don't know if I will Rock Band either.
If you were in a room, though, and there were, say, three other people would...
sure, it'll be fun.
Encouraging you to go and, I'll get it so we can have a play with it. I'm sure you would.
Definitely.
You would.
Well, I'm sure it's going to cost a fortune.
It does, of course, depend on the quality of the tracks they put on as well, doesn't it? You know, what you want to listen to and play up against. So, I mean, that's always been the great strength of Rock Band and Guitar Hero 2, isn't it?
Yeah. But, I mean, FIFA and Tiger Woods were only like $4 or $5.99, so I don't think it's going to cost a fortune.
Yeah, I mean, I say a fortune. I'm just talking about in the iPhone games arena. That is a fortune, isn't it?
Yeah. Moving on to games, November 17th, is allegedly the date when Twitter, Facebook and Last.fm support will come to Xbox Live. So on the UK website, there's an advert for it, and at the bottom it says launching November 17th. So I'm quite looking forward to having all three available from Xbox.
That will be good, actually.
Chris is remaining silent in the whole thing.
Yeah. it's on the PC, which is when I've again got the input devices that make those kind of things worthwhile. I don't know. I'll find out on November 17th.
Yep. Yeah, you see, I don't know that you'd really input on those things, though, would you? But you can see, I mean, the whole thing about a lot of these things is actually to see what's going on. Or is that just me that's just incredibly nosy about what everyone else is doing, doesn't really post what's going on in my own world?
I'm already pretty bad at that kind of refresh, click, refresh, refresh, refresh. So having it in another place is probably going to cause me a headache.
It just depends how it's done. I can see it being quite handy. And even as more games, I'm guessing, will start to support things like updating from in-game to Facebook and Twitter. It'd be quite nice to see. And Last.fm, it's another music playback option.
Sometimes
on Xbox.
You don't know quite how you're going to use it until it's all there, and having more things available, could be good.
Finally, we've got the... I'm going to pronounce this wrong. Been waiting to pronounce this. Also, Eigenharp, Henry.
The Eigenharp, the sci-fi bassoon, an amazing piece of, it's a musical instrument, really. Let's put it this way. It's like a cross between a theremin, which is one of those things with the two poles, one horizontal and one vertical, that Bill Bailey sometimes used, that makes the kind of screaming noise, really, as you put your hand closer to it and pull them away, or a tenorion, as Little Boots has put out some quite cool stuff with that. These kind of really high tech musical instruments, but this thing is just amazing. It costs £3,950, and
cheap
at half the price, definitely, and makes some amazing sounds. You know, it's a kind of a band in your pocket, although it doesn't fit in your pocket because it's an enormous musical instrument thing. So I was quite impressed by some of the music that you can make with that. If you think that kind of $4,000 is a bit much for a musical instrument that you probably can't play without a huge amount of effort, then of course there are all those Smule apps developed, you know, kind of leaf trombone and ocarina on your and loads of tenorion wannabe kind of apps as well on the iPhone, which are fractional.
There was a video of this being used on BBC, wasn't it? Because I noticed it as well during the week, and I mean, they made a pretty cool sound, you know, using it, and it was quite funky. But it did remind me a bit of Tomorrow's World of old, you know, when they got the people coming in to play the latest bangle, you know, next day. Oh, I can't even think of the word I'm looking for. You know, tomorrow's musical instruments being played by three quite geeky guys from Devon.
It's Tomorrow's World from 1965.
Yeah, I know, and it's a huge step up from the stylophone, isn't it? Where Rolf Harris used it. I mean, we're really getting to things. You can actually make something, some reasonable musical expression if you've got some sort of talent.
But there's some really nifty kind of synthesizers on the iPhone as well. You know, and in the right hands, the music they make on them are superb.
That's I think this was a step above that. I'll give it that much credit.
Oh yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, as like, you know, there are a number of options out there. Now, this looks amazing. It just looks absolutely amazing.
I mean, they've even made it look good. I think it looks weird and maybe a bit geeky, but it does look good. And if they genuinely were making all of that sound come out of those three, what did it say, Eigenharps, then that's pretty amazing, really.
It is quite amazing. What I did notice as well was there was actually a cheaper version as well, a kind of a mini version, the Eigenharp Pico, which comes in at a much more reasonable £400 or something, I think.
Well,
bargain.
I think we should all buy one. Eigenharp should sponsor us, and they can send us a review in it, and we can all play around.
Eigenharp theme music for Digital Outbox.
Hey, now you're talking.
So that wraps up the show. Apart from this week's picks, Chris, you want to take us through your pick for the week?
Oh yes, I've been waiting for this moment. I was just looking around, and I found possibly hopelessly, tragically, and desperately geeky pick, but it is just brilliant as well, which is Portal t-shirts. So if anyone's played Portal, they'll know the kind of effect that these t-shirts hope to achieve. And basically the t-shirt's got a camera embedded in it as well as a screen, and the opposing t-shirts, so these come in pairs, shows the picture from the other camera.
Oh,
so effectively your stomach you're showing a picture being sent out from the other person's t-shirt. Now, on the picture that I initially saw, these things look really quite geeky cool. And, you know, enough for me to click around, but I saw a video, and pretty much the screen and the camera are effectively a chopped out laptop, I guess. So, you know, it's like a big TFT screen you're carrying underneath your t-shirt. So it's like dragging these people down under the weight of it. So the concept was a lot better than the implementation, but it was still quite funny.
It's like Buck Rogers, isn't it? Buck Rogers had that little thing that the professor guy used to carry around. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're showing something there that whatever. Right. Anyway, I'm going to put the link into the show notes of the initial concept that I saw, rather than the video of these people lugging their TFTs around. My pick for this week.
This isn't real, surely.
I don't know. You can buy them for $99 each, but you have to buy the two for it to be worthwhile.
That really nicely takes us back up to the very top of the show, where we're talking about scams and things, aren't we? Do you not think it's maybe a scam to get your to give you $99? I remain unconvinced, but you know, maybe.
You've got to see the video to believe these things exist.
Yeah, but I'm looking. I'm looking at a comment section that says this was an April Fool's Day item.
Are you saying my pick's not real? Don't destroy my day.
Have you parted with $200?
No, I haven't. I never would, but I want it to be real.
I think you should buy it and see if you can.
I'm not spending $200 on this.
The t-shirt.
By the way, it's an April Fool's.
Oh.
But thanks for doing the research and sharing that.
My
with
world's
us.
Just a little bit, you know, less good now.
Yeah, so I can't believe those idiots that as Henry says, you know, so easily punked.
It's a good idea. Someone make it happen.
Did you get this in an email? Please talk about this as your pick this week on Digital Outbox. And you thought, oh yeah, that's a great idea.
No. Oh, you've just destroyed my world. My day's ruined.
It's the wrong technology anyway. The times of transmission should really be over kind of RFID tags or something, you know. None of this Wi-Fi stuff, you know, to...
Anyway, yeah.
I don't care anyway. Someone make this happen and then I'll buy them.
but your t-shirt would have to be a widescreen one, wouldn't it?
Ouch!
Moving on, Henry. Your pick this week.
My pick is for a Mac software, piece of software called Fission, which is kind of an MP3 splitter. And you might think that $32 for a little app which just splits up MP3s is maybe a bit much, but actually the way this is implemented is really, really good. And if you've got lots of MP3s that you're kind of messing around with and chopping and things. It's really good. And one of the things it also does, of course, is it makes your iPhone ringtones for nothing, rather than having to pay the Apple tax for those we all know our views on iPhone ringtones. So it works really, really well, really nice interface, and I'm really enjoying using it.
And as this was your pick last week, although you didn't get to talk about it because you're away rescuing family members,
Thanks for bringing that up, Ian.
No, I took a look and bought it because I thought, I've got so much editing to do of your audio that I'm going to need to have a great tool to do it with.
And what did you think?
It's actually very nice, very, very nice. It loads up the audio really quickly compared to, like, you know, opening up in GarageBand and editing within there, you know, and it's just the interface, even just to scroll around and move to the bit you need to cut out, and it's lovely, really, really nice.
I think the other main feature to mention is that it doesn't re-encode your MP3, so you're actually, and that really is what cuts out a lot of the time taken, so it's brilliant, yeah.
Yep, no, very, very good first pick.
Thank you.
And my pick this week is the controversial Tweety 2 for the iPhone.
The controversial Tweety 2?
Controversial. And the reason it's controversial is it's a new version of Tweety, and you need to buy it again. So you need to buy version 2. So this is, it's caused quite a lot of, I guess it's a lot of, if you go into the iPhone reviews for it already, there's a lot of people giving it 1 star, saying they're refusing to buy it and refusing to pay for it. My take on it, it's £1.50 or something, or £1.79, or what is that, $3? Get a grip. You know, the version, the guys put a lot of effort into developing this. Apps take time and money to develop. If you don't like it, go and buy, get some of the free ones, or go and write your own. You know, if it's that big an issue for you, go and write your own instead of spending £1.79.
I did think this wasn't as big an update as I thought it would have been.
Oh, well, for me it is.
Did you think that? Yeah.
And the reason, it's just I think the interface is really nice on it. I can read tweets really easily. But to get the way it just splits up the ads and the direct messages, and it ties up with the Tweety interface on the Mac, was excellent.
And I found it easier to use than Twitterific as well, actually. Twitterific has obviously split down all those kind of things anyway. But this actually does address those issues now.
Yeah, and I just found that, you know, even when I select a tweet, and I then get so many options to then deal with it. You know, I can retweet, quote, I can mail it. And also, if I just, there's a whole other usability things that I really like within the app that I've not seen elsewhere. You know, so that kind of drag down to refresh.
I love this. I mean, I'm calling that overscroll. I don't know what it's really called.
I've no idea, but
stand out for me. Yeah. I think people are going to use that all over the place.
And there's little things like, if you've dug down into somebody's tweet and then onto the actual user itself, to get back up to the timeline, if you just on the actual heading, if you just swipe left to right, it jumps you right back up to the top again. So you don't need to go back and back and back. So it's just there's a lot of thought in this app. And I think it just, for me, it's been a great update of the original Tweety, which I've stuck with, even though the Twitter, if it got updated, and there's that other one, there's another app, and I mean, Shaki always has a laugh, he bought this Twitterlater Pro, and to be fair, the developer, I mean, there's loads of functionality in it, but it's just almost way over the top. The interface for me is always a bit too much. So Tweety 2, highly recommended, and there's going to be a free update to those who use Tweety on the Mac to the new version, and I think that's going to start to tie in between what I've last read on the Mac and then what I then pick up on the iPhone. So a really nice app to end the show with.
Very good.
And that's us done.
We've made it.
We've made it.
I've made it even more amazingly. No romping off for me this week, eh?
It's been great to have Henry for the, I was going to say the hour and a half, but I think the podcast will just last about an hour if it wasn't for Skype constantly dropping its drawers on us.
I say people hopefully won't notice the fact that we've been having all sorts of problems today.
Yeah, and
they will notice.
I think it's maybe my end as well. So who
we
knows?
Like to think it's your end.
Who knows? We blame Ian.
Yeah,
blame Ian's end.
I've got big shoulders, I can take it. So if you want to find out more about us, our website is digitaloutbox.com, and we'd love to hear from you. So either leave a comment for Chris on the website, or you can send us an email at info@digitaloutbox.com. We're also on Twitter, and that's Digital Outbox. Henry, where can we find out more about you?
You can find me, I'm at TalkRhubarb on Twitter, or you can find me at talkrhubarb.com/WordPress is my blog there.
And Chris?
Yep, Twitter is CheesyUK, and my blog is chrishutchinson.org.uk. And I think we need to set up a campaign called Comments for Chris.
A campaign?
We need banners, probably an online marketing plot, thing. Comments for Chris.
Well,
give Chris a comment.
There we go.
Give Chris a comment.
I never knew you were that way affected. I feel we should. We'll ask around. Maybe we should start up a banner campaign. Like a Digital Outbox and all that kind of nonsense, and we'll get it on all our blogs.
Yeah, well, I did leave a comment for you, Chris, this week.
Yeah, it was well received. And just think, if I get this much enjoyment from just simple comments, think what I'd get from an iTunes review. It'd be amazing.
Desperado. For me, my blog is iandee.net, and on Twitter I am Shweepa. And I think that's us done.
We better do, because I think Skype's flaking out again.
Yeah,
and tune in next week when hopefully Sick Boy Shaky will be back in the flesh.
Get well soon, Shaq.
Get well soon.
With more, I'm sure, what will we be talking about next week? I'm sure we'll be talking about Uncharted 2, which he'll be picking up. And undoubtedly, there's more tablet rumours that he'll want to comment on.
Yeah. There's probably 0.1 inches to be talked about, I think, at least.
Size isn't everything. Catch you all later.
See ya.
Bye.
Hello. What a pain in the arse. Is that dropped again? You still there?
Ian's gone.